Hi, and welcome to What the Phalange, the podcast where we watch every episode of Friends, discuss it, deconstruct it, and fan over it one episode at a time.
My name is Emily, pronouns she and her. You can find me on Twitter as EmilyB__, or on Instagram as EmilyKemi__.
My name is Quinn, pronouns they, them, and you can find me on social media as Feminist Massage Therapist or The Basic NB. This week, we're talking about Season 2, Episode 14, the one with the prom video.
Boo, boo, boo. This episode aired on February 1st, 1996. It was written by Alexa Young and directed by James Burrows.
According to IMDb, this is the episode where the gang watches a home video from the night of Monica and Rachel's prom, and Joey gives Chandler a hideous bracelet.
This is also the one where we have to cringe through fat suits and false facts about crustaceans. Try saying that five times fast.
I bet you did. You tried.
I didn't try, but I thought I really liked the alliteration.
Well, just false facts about crustaceans.
Crustaceans.
Crustaceans. Like, can I say it once? I don't know.
So, hey, Quinn.
Hey.
How's it going?
Hey, neighbor.
Neighborino.
Neighborino.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's been like so much has happened since we last recorded. Like, it hasn't been that long for people who have listened to the podcast because we batch recorded our last two episodes, which you would know if you listened to them because we started to lose it at the end of the second one.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, no, it's been a hot minute.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute. And then also, like, in that hot minute, I think a lot has happened. It, you know, life just took some turns that were unexpected. Essentially, the apartment underneath Emily's went up for rent. And
Oh my God, the next morning after we recorded, we went for brunch the next morning. And I think it was.
No, it had to be after.
I don't.
Anyway, whatever. It's not important. But anyway, the apartment went up for rent and I was like, I would be just really passing up an opportunity if I didn't sign the lease on this rent.
Yeah. So Quinn is now my downstairs neighbor. So yeah. I can be really, really loud and bother Quinn all day.
Mm-hmm. And really so fun. I moved again, everyone. And I'm still currently moving. I can't find anything except for my fridge.
And your coffee.
And my coffee. And my desk where I do work.
Yes.
That is all.
So after like 2 months of living together as roommates, we now like have separate houses, but like can walk to each other's home by just going down the stairs or going up the stairs. It's really nice.
So nice to have our own space.
It's very
nice. I mean, it's also particularly nice. I haven't had my own space in a very long time. So I'm very, very excited. Yeah. And so life has made some twists and turns. We still have some travel plans for the winter, but I'm starting up my massage therapy practice in Montreal now. So
yeah, if you're in Montreal,
take a look out for that.
Mm-hmm.
So
I was just gonna say, how are you feeling about this episode? Maybe tell me how you feel and, like, things you want to talk about this episode.
What I like about this episode, okay, I think what I've noticed thus far, a couple of things. Whenever I get to a good episode, I'm like, oh, right. The other episodes I didn't like as much. Like, the last two episodes that we just recorded, like, those episodes I've, like, kind of, like, just give or take to me. You know, like, I don't
That's
really...
so funny because I really like the Super Bowl episodes. I think they're really funny. I feel like I like one more than the other, and now I can't remember which one it is. I think I like the Julia Roberts one better.
Yeah, I definitely like that one better as well.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I'm like not super into it. Maybe there's like specific scenes that I like in those episodes, but the episodes as a whole, I'm like not as into.
They're not as
whereas
memorable.
Like, this episode, I feel like the last two episodes, they had a lot of money in them. I feel like this episode is like one of those like big storyline moments in the series, right?
Yeah, it's an iconic episode.
They've been building up to it. You know, there's been a lot of like groundwork laid down. And I feel like they put a lot of work into crafting a good story. Mm. And not like a cookie cutter story, you know? Mm. It's not like this very typical, like, you know, like set up in a specific way, you know, like having throwing in this random like prom video partway through and having like the parents come over that sort of like leads them to this prom video. Like if you had watched this episode for the first time,
you wouldn't have known this was coming.
Yeah. Like this, like it just feels like real life.
Mm.
And it just so happened to kind of like lead the story on. It wasn't like a story. It was like watching like life, you know, like how life, like one thing just sort of leads to the next.
Right. I guess I don't. Sure. Yeah. Maybe we'll get into it when we get to the prom video. Like, I feel like we should dedicate a large chunk of this episode to just talking about the prom video. Like the last two scenes of this episode are like the most integral. There's just a lot to unpack, but, yeah, I guess like I feel like I'm going to be controversial this episode and say that like I don't actually think that what Ross did was anything extraordinary.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And I just think that like he like had a crush on a girl and like wanted to ask her out and like got, you know, kind of pushed by his parents reluctantly, and then like her actual date showed up.
Okay, let's get there when we get there, Emily.
Yeah, I just...
Calm down.
Whatever.
But I want to talk about this because I feel like rewatching it and, like, trying to, like, deconstruct in my mind has, like, made me think of different things. Anyway, okay. So,
yeah, me too. I have a lot of, like, mixed feelings. And, like, a lot of it is, like, I don't actually have an actual established feeling about it. Whereas usually when I come into these episodes, I'm like, I feel this way about this and this way about that and this way about that. But there's actually quite a few things that happen in this episode where I'm like, I need to talk to you about it because I'm not quite sure how I feel about it. So I think it's going to be kind of fun to like work through it with you. But yeah, so the few things that I want to talk about is definitely like Ross, just like Ross in this episode and like just, yeah, Ross. I also want to talk about like obviously, and we're going to get into this when we get into it, but like Courtney Cox wearing the fat suit and quote unquote fat Monica, fat phobia in general, all the fat jokes that happen in this, but like Quinn and I kind of have determined that we just like, there's just so much to say about this. And we actually want to talk about quote unquote fat Monica as like an arch in a likely going to be like a bonus episode, but we can't say anything without promising you anything because we are notorious for promising things that don't end up happening. So we want to have larger conversations about this. That's the goal eventually. To talk about like Monica as a character throughout the show, but you know, we'll see what happens. So we're going to talk about it a little bit today, but not necessarily get into it as a whole. I also want to talk about like, you know, Monica's childhood trauma and I want to talk about crustaceans and lobsters. And I also want to talk about gay jokes because the bracelet thing is like, there's gay shit. Like they're like making fun of like feminine men. There's just a lot to talk about this episode.
Okay. I also want to talk about how they make fun of pirates and it's very, no, I'm just kidding. I want to talk about also the normalizing of like men's disgusting and horrible behavior in this episode.
Totally.
Like in literally every single storyline, it's anyway. So I'm yes. Let's enter Jack Geller.
Oh my God.
Okay, not yet. But yeah, first scenes first.
Yeah. So okay. So scene one. We are in Joey's apartment. Joey and Chandler's apartment. Chandler is playing foosball, and then Joey walks in and he hands him like an envelope of cash with like $812 or whatever it is. And so obviously Joey owes him a lot of money. I put in my notes, like I wanted to kind of ask you about this question, like ask you about this because I don't actually feel like it's offensive, but like maybe it is. So when Chandler says like he kind of makes like a sex worker joke. He's like, I don't know what Big Leon told you, but I'm like, it's $1,000 for the whole night. Like, to me, that wasn't offensive. Like, it was just kind of, like, funny and, like, ha ha ha. Like, I don't think, like, there was anything malicious behind that joke. You know what I mean? Like,
I think the only thing there is, like, in media, there's a lot of,
like, pimp portrayal sort of thing?
Yeah, like, really kind of boiling down the idea of sex work to, like, this one thing. Yeah. And whereas like sex work is so many different things mm-hmm. and also looks so many different ways and is a legitimate form of like independent businesses, you know, mm-hmm. like
yeah, for sure.
people who are like self-employed. And so like, I would say that like, maybe that's,
yeah,
that's maybe where the issue is in that joke.
But I think overall it's just a well-written joke. I was like, I was into it, you know,
it was cute.
And then he just like randomly says like, now I can get my pony. And you're like, Chandler, yeah, that's what the hell? Like, I just think that Chandler has like, and again, this is Alexa Young's writing. Like this is, mm-hmm. she does a lot of good Chandler jokes. Like if you look at the last episodes that have been written by Alexa Young, like she really has Chandler saying some really good lines. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's, yeah, anyways, it's classic. But how do you feel about this bracelet?
Oh my God. So, okay, what I find with this gift is, and it reminds me of a particular family member.
Oh God, I know exactly what you're gonna say. Don't say it. That's so rude.
No, it's like when someone sees something and they actually want to buy it for themselves. Like they like it, but
then I don't know who you're talking about.
But they can't really like justify it for themselves, and they want like it's something that they love, and it's almost like this act of giving that is like a form of love. Like I love this thing, and therefore I'm going to give it to you, and it's just one of those things where it's like then the receiver is always like, I have no use for this and don't want it. And
yeah.
This is awkward because you clearly are so emotionally invested this whole situation.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like a very relatable situation, you know?
For sure. And I just think that like Chandler or like Matthew Perry as an actor in this episode is so good. Like the way he like just like does, like his body is like choreographed almost. Like he just like takes the bracelet and then like puts it in the drawer, like puts the chair, in front of the door,
chair.
We're gonna leave that there. And it's just so great. And then he puts it on and it's, you are so wearing that bracelet.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah, that whole exchange is so good. Yeah.
Very relatable. And,
very relatable.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, like later on they make the like a Sopranos, no, like a Goodfellas joke, which it's like very, I think what I find particularly cute is that like, you know, Joey like this bracelet Italian. Is like very gaudy, mm-hmm. you know, and does have that sort of like edge, but it's just so cute because then it's like best buds is like written on it. And you're just like, Joey, you just like wear your heart on your sleeve. You're just like so cute and genuine. Like it's just,
He's a big oaf.
He's like, such a sweetie. But it's just very cute. Nice. Joey, I love you.
I love Joey too. Yeah, so
now we're at Monica's interview.
We are.
Which is like a very memorable scene. And like, unfortunately, also just like very relatable.
Yeah, I just put creepy gross salad dude. And
accurate. Okay, also.
And then I wrote, this is terrible. Blah. Men are gross.
So if you don't remember this scene, because you haven't watched the show recently, basically Monica's in an interview. The guy is like, okay, let's see you do, like, actually do the things. You know, I want you to, like, walk me through you making a salad, and I'm going to sit here and watch you. And then, like, as she describes it, he's like,
ugh. He's, like, getting turned on.
Yeah, like, very clearly becoming very aroused and, like, urging it to get more intense for him to get more aroused. Yeah. And, okay. And obviously that's like really disgusting. But I also have another issue with this scene is, Emily, maybe you know this better than me, but like, can you even julienne tomatoes?
I think of that every single fucking time I think of that. I'm like, no, you cannot.
You can't julienne tomatoes.
I don't think you can. Like, because julienne is like thin strips.
Yeah.
You can't thin strip a
tomato. It's like you julienne carrots to go in a salad or in a stir fry. Like, you can't julienne tomatoes.
Someone's gonna like email us and be mad at us about this. Okay, wait. Oh, no, wait. Apparently you can.
Oh.
You can julienne tomatoes.
I don't believe them.
Oh, you gotta, like, you take out the seeds, and then you just get, like, the outside that is, like, thick skin, and then you julienne that part of the tomato. That makes sense. I don't like the gooey part of tomatoes.
You're just fucking cutting the tomato thinly.
Like, that's what julienne is.
Yeah, but, like, julienne is, like, these perfect, like, squared sizes that, and, like, making these perfect little strips. You can't do that with a tomato. No, you can, like, be like, I have the intention of Julietting this tomato, but really it's just going to become these thin strips of mush, you know? You can't actually Juliette a tomato. I will fight to the death on this. That's just wrong.
Well, someone who is a chef on the internet is going to fight you to the death on it. Because whatever. Apparently people Julietting tomatoes all the time. But I did think of that, and I was like, this is ridiculous. You don't use... Well, first of all, you wouldn't Julietting a tomato for a salad.
Yeah, no.
It's just... anyways. But it's funny, and... She said the Julian thing to get more of a reaction out of him in order to confirm her suspicions that he's just a gross, creepy salad dude. So, yeah. And this is terrible. And, like, also very relatable for, like, women going into an interview and, like, having to deal with some gross dude being gross, you know? And, like...
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. We also skipped over the fact that she puts Chandler as a reference.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask, have you ever done this? Have you given a friend's name on like, your CV as a reference?
Probably, but usually it's, like... Someone who I actually worked with is usually the situation.
Oh, nice. When I was living at Pierce House, we had, like, a designated person who was, like, our friend. And I'm not going to out them just so, like, they're not, like... but, like, they used to be the reference for, like, everyone's CV. Because, like, they had, like, a very, like, deep voice and, like, could, like, come off as, like, very serious, and so, like, was just the person that you put on your CV for, like, everyone did it. I think of that all the time when I see this episode. It's just, like, our friend who everyone will put as a reference.
That's really funny.
Next scene, we're in Monica and Rachel's apartment. Everyone except for Monica and Rachel are there. I'm kidding. But I'm not wrong.
No, you're not wrong.
Monica's in the shower, though. But Ross is in the kitchen, and he gets a phone call.
Answering their phone.
Which I feel like is more of a thing in the 90s, answering someone's phone. Because, like...
Yeah, because, like, you
take messages. It's, yeah. Like, people don't have personal cell phones. Like, it's just the one phone in the house. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that's more of a thing. Like, I remember answering the phone... more when I was younger.
Yeah, and then also, like, if someone calls and they're, like, about to step out and you just miss it, you can't just call them back even if they leave them a message. So yeah. If you, like, playing a game of telephone is, like, literally, you know, where you're just, like, trying to get a hold of each other and you just can't.
Yeah.
Ross is taking a message from Kelsey.
Casey.
Whatever.
Yeah. And then he hides her message, which is not valid.
Okay, so, first of all, this is not a spoiler, but foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. For anyone who gets it, total foreshadowing. And, like, I also want to point out that, like, this is, like, starting to be a pattern. We're going to see it further in the episode, too. Like, anyway, I don't want to go into it right now because it's more in the next episode, in the next scene. But,
yeah, he definitely is, like, starting this, like, or going back to Ross in season one of, like, being kind of, like, possessive about Rachel.
Exactly.
Without any,
Legitimacy.
Like, not that it's ever legitimate to be a possessive about a person, but, like, there's just, like, levels. Yeah. Where it's more legitimate.
In a different relationship dynamic where if Rachel was actually, like, yeah, we are sort of seeing each other, and then is, like, he's picking up the phone and taking... messages right. from someone else, like, there would be some legitimacy to, like, the...
Being like, why? Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and, sure. And feeling, like, why you can't be doing this.
This is outside the boundaries of the relationship that we have, the boundaries that we've established in this relationship.
Right.
But that's not the scenario. Yeah, exactly. For sure.
To flip it over, though, like, there is also a certain amount of, like, being able to, like, be emotional about the fact that, like, they were very close to dating and now she's starting to see other people.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Hiding someone's phone number.
But, like, I also, it's, like, I want to give room for, like, the joke aspect of this. You know what I mean? Like, him just being, like, oh, like, first putting it on the fridge and then Chandler being, like, do a little dance, make a little love, get down tonight. And then he puts it up, like, this kind of, also, like, immediate reaction to, like, the joke, you know? Like,
also, like, just the way that David Schwimmer, like, just, like, moves his body to do these, like, weird things.
Okay, you know what I think of all the time? Have you seen the movie Madagascar?
Yeah, that's what I was just...
Yeah. So so for people who don't. No, he's not the sloth.
What
he's
is
the
he?
Giraffe.
Oh, right.
But he's like, so right. In, if you haven't seen the like kids movie Madagascar, you have to watch it. It's great. But David Schwimmer voices the giraffe, who is this like neurotic Ross character. Like he's just, and he's got like these limbs and his head and his like neck moves. And it's just like, he is a, the giraffe is the embodiment of Ross. And it's just like, it's so good. And I think of like, Ross as a giraffe in all of these scenes.
Yeah, it's funny because it's just like they animate it in a way that emanates David Schwimmer. And anyway,
yeah, it's so good.
It's yeah.
But yeah, so here's where we get our first or our incorrect fact about crustacean. Do you want to hear about how lobsters do mate?
Yeah.
Okay. So a female lobster who's ready to mate, I'm quoting right out of this article, okay? Which they can only do right after they've molted. So do you know what molted is? It's like they shed their whatever skin. Their shell. Yeah. A female lobster.
They have exoskeletons, everyone. They're mushy on the inside and have bone on the outside.
Right. Yes. They talk about that later. spoiler alert. Okay. A female lobster who's ready to mate hangs out near the den of the local dominant male and fans her pheromone-laced urine into his home.
Mm.
This relaxes the male, making him less aggressive and more receptive to mating. Then there's a brief courtship and the male allows the female into his den. Anywhere from a few hours to a few days later, the female slips into something a little more comfortable by shedding her exoskeleton. This article is hilariously written. Shacking up with the neighborhood tough guy guarantees her protection during this vulnerable time of shedding her exoskeleton.
Oh, okay. I understood that she got rid of her exoskeleton and then went knocking on someone's door.
She goes first. She goes fully dressed. And then when she's comfortable with him, she removes her exoskeleton.
Wow.
The pair mates. The male deposits his sperm in the female. Once her new shell has hardened, a week or two later, she takes off and another female can have a turn. Often the females in an area will stagger the timing of their molts to make their reproductive conga line more efficient. Yes, I am reading directly from this article.
Wow.
As soon as one female is done with the stud, the next one is already waiting to pee on his doorstep. Thank you, whoever wrote this article. I am going to link it in the show notes.
That's so great.
Amazing. But yeah, so they do not mate for life. They mate for like two hours to 2 weeks, and then that's about it. So, yeah, fun fact. Anyways, moving on.
That was great. Interesting.
Yeah. So,
in my notes, I wrote when it was like, you're my lobster, I just put not true in brackets. Sorry. Hate to break it to you.
But it's still like, I don't know, like I think it's a classic iconic line. Like, I mean, everyone knows
it literally only comes up in this one episode, and yet like two lobsters like holding little lobster hands is like so representative of friends as a whole,
and like people reference it in like their wedding vows and things like that. Like it's a real thing. Like I looked it up and like there's like articles written by like wedding planners of having to like plan a wedding with like lobsters being the theme, like just like weird shit. Like
wow.
Yeah. But anyway, so Monica comes out of her fifth shower. Terrible.
Which makes sense.
And then Phoebe asks her like, what are your other possibilities? And I think this line from Monica is the best. She goes, do you know this line? She goes, well, there is the possibility that I won't make rent. And if that's not relatable, I don't know what is.
Yep. And then the best, I think another great line that comes right after is, it's, you know, he's like, I can lend you, Ross is like, I can lend you money. And then she's like, no, I'm going to feel tense and uncomfortable around you. And he's like, well, then you should borrow from the parents because you already feel tense and uncomfortable around them. Might as well make some money off of it.
So good.
I think that's a great way of looking at it, you know?
Guilty and tense around them already. Yeah.
No. It's like, you know, you might as well just like feel like expect what the tense and discomfort is going to come from. And it's just going to come from borrowing the money.
Yeah.
As opposed to all the other random shit that your family can throw at you. Anyway.
Yeah. It's great. I'm for it. I also like, yeah, we see Jack and Judy in this episode again, and they're just specific. Like, right. Yeah. So then here in this moment, we get Chandler, who's about to say something. The gold bracelet falls off his wrist. And then a slew of really uncomfortable, mean jokes. Not uncomfortable. Mean jokes get tossed towards Chandler. And, like, to me, it's not really insulting to Chandler. Like, it's insulting to Joey, and I feel kind of bad about Joey. But also, it's a terrible bracelet. And so, like, I'm not really that upset about the making fun of it.
I know. Okay, first of all, though, they make a pirate joke. They're like, well, it must have cost quite a few doubloons. Okay, and I just want to do a shout-out to all of the other 90s kids out there who used to play Neopets.
Oh, my God, I thought of the same thing.
I, like, still to this day, I forgot the password to log into, like, my old Neopets account and still feel very heartbroken that I've just, like, left my pets to just starve to death somewhere in the inter-ether.
It was one of the best games.
It was so, well, there's so many games in one, except for, like, the stock market and the gambling got, like, super shifty. It was, like,
oh, yeah,
directed to children, and it was, there was like a ton of gambling games, and like parents were sort of like, this is weird.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
And then there was like the stock market that was just, again, gambling. There was no EFTs or mutual funds.
I'm trying to see if I can find Netflix. Oh my God. Neopets. Wow. 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 It's a real thing still. I'm gonna make
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Now you can like even buy stuffed animals.
Oh, I hate
that. They have like special codes. You can have like the stuffed animal version. Okay, you shake your head, but I totally want that. I've had to stop myself from, like, partaking in this so many times.
I just, like, miss when, as a kid, like, stuffed animals were stuffed animals and internet games were internet games. Like, I hate that, like, everything is now, like...
You just like when things have their own, like, little allotted space and they don't, like, you know, don't touch. They don't seep into each other. And, like, do you eat out of a plate that has little, like, pockets and holes for each type of food?
I used to for a very long time. You don't remember that? Mama baked shepherd's pie and she put my mashed potatoes in one bowl, my ground beef in one bowl, and my corn in the other bowl. Anyways, so Monica and Ross's dad come, or dad and mom come over. They say that they're turning the room into a gym. Or Monica's room into a gym.
So freaking rude.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, why not Ross's room? Well, all of his trophies are just, we just don't want to disturb them. Like, they're living entities of our favorite child.
I know, like, people make fun of Monica a lot for being, like, neurotic and intense. But it's like, yo, if you grew up with the mom that she had, like, you would be the same as Monica. Like, Monica experienced some major childhood trauma.
Yeah. Like, and if you're just, like, starting to tune into our podcast now, we have, like, I think an episode, which episode was it? It's the one with the funeral in season one. It's in the first half of the season. And it's
the
just,
one where Anna dies twice.
Yeah, and I feel like the show does a pretty good job of opening up that relationship and kind of exploring it and just kind of demonstrating, like, the intergenerational trauma and how, like, Monica is a part of that. And, like,
Yeah, they're rough.
Anyway, so I recommend going and listening to that episode.
Anyways, side note, Rachel walks in with laundry, wearing her laundry outfit, which is on point. And she said, basically she says hi to them.
Interaction is weird.
Yeah, and then they bring up the fact that her parents are splitting up, and she's like, oh, well, they're just separated, so, like, who knows what will happen, which is kind of a weird energy to have when it comes to, like, a parent divorce.
This is, like, I feel the first episode where Jack Geller is, like, he's not just, like, the weird dad, like, making the weird dad comments, but, like, now he's, like, also, like, the creepy weird dad. Like, this is, like, I feel like this is the first time they really introduce that, like, part of his character, you know, where he's, like, making comments about...
Oh, yeah, he gets creepy in this episode.
Yeah, he, like, makes a comment about, like, you know, the tennis player's tushy. And, you know, and then, like, is talking about, like, excuse me, burp, Rachel's parents in, like, that weird, like, you know, like.
Especially after that incident in Hawaii.
Yeah.
But what was, like, the incident, like, what are they supposed to be implying?
Like, I'm kind of assuming someone hooked up with someone else or something.
Yeah, that would make sense. It's also, like, a weird thing to just bring up with your, like, with
Oh my god, yeah. It's just so, like,
it's just weird. It's just, but that's Jack's character, I guess. Yeah, is what you're saying.
They're like, yeah, but it's just weird because it's like they're creating this character that is like kind of relatable. Or kind of is super relatable. Like, I definitely like grew up where families like dads were exactly like that. Mm. You know? Like making inappropriate comments, but like it's okay because they're like the dad. And like doing shit like that. And it's like, it's interesting because they've like created this character that's sort of like just representative of like this familiar character that everyone kind of knows someone who's like this. Mm. But then there is like a certain amount of like, but is it also just like no one is actually like, there's kind of an aspect of it that's kind of just okay, like normalizing it. Like there isn't,
yeah,
I don't know. Like I definitely as a kid just felt like, didn't like, I thought he was like weird, but like not, there was a certain amount of acceptable to it. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. Mm-hmm. He's just a weird character in general. And like, I do think that like they don't necessarily call him out on his flaws as a character. And instead like kind of uplift him for his like more dad-like aspect. Like when he has like deep talks with his kids and like, you know, mm-hmm. throughout the show, we'll see that a little more. But like, yeah, he definitely has growth, I think, his character to a certain degree. Like this episode, he's kind of a big weirdo. Like I just think that I see his character grow in a way, but I don't know if that's intentional or they
is
just,
it growth or like inconsistency?
There's probably more inconsistency, yeah. But mm-hmm. anyways. Yeah. So they're back in Central Perk. Well, it's Chandler and PB only. And some woman in a red velvet shirt is checking Chandler out.
90s alert.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, comeback, current fashion alert.
Yeah, I was going to say comeback alert. And then, okay.
Transphobic joke?
Yeah. So is it transphobic? It's yeah. Like, so, okay. So Phoebe goes, like, dude, like, he's like, okay, she's like, okay, I want to get this just right. And she like, quote unquote, mans up, you know, like she like, mm-hmm. like gets masculine. And she goes, dude, 11 o'clock, totally hot girl checking you out. And then like, we all laugh and it's funny. And I think that joke would be funny like that. I think it would have been like, mm-hmm. I get it. She's acting like obnoxious men who are gross and obnoxious. And then she says like, I think I'm ready for my penis now. And like, in the context of the Friends universe, it's like, they don't understand that trans people exist when they wrote this joke. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't think that trans people were a real thing when this joke was written. And
except,
you can see
except
that.
There's like a whole storyline that like Chandler's parent is like this, like technically trans question mark, because there's like so yeah. much inconsistency. Like they are aware of what trans is. You know?
Yeah. So, and that's the thing is like, if this, like, you can't look at this joke as it existing in a bubble of its own, but like, I can understand how the joke exists in its bubble. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I definitely can, but like you can for all of these things. Right. Mm-hmm. And just to like catch anyone up who's a little bit lost in this conversation, the joke is like, okay, I'm ready for my penis now, which like inherently insinuates that like that all men have penises, essentially, mm-hmm. which is incorrect.
It's more like a cis-sexist joke than it is transphobic.
Yeah, it's a like, cis-sexism it's... joke. There's also like a gender roles joke that exists mm-hmm. there where it's like, men have to be this specific way and they're like gruff and they're going to talk about women in this specific way. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, this sort of like attitude or approach or like belief of like gender and everything is just at the end of the day, harmful for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, no one wins in the situation, mm-hmm. you know, men, there's so many men who struggle with like having to like come across in this way. And you know, and also it's just like furthering on the tokenizing and sexualizing of women and degradation of women and mm-hmm. not allowing, you know, people of various genders to either act that way or not act that way. Anyway, mm-hmm. you know.
I totally agree with you. And, like, I 100% get it. But I also just feel as though, like, I'm trying to figure out a way to, like, feel about this. Because, like, I think that, like, the first part of this joke is, like, to a certain extent, I think it's Phoebe making fun of men. You know what I mean? Like, she's making fun of this, like, macho dude thing that mm-hmm. dudes do. You know what I mean? Like, I think she's, like, and then, like, the penis joke to me pulls into that by, like, being, like, men are, like, penis having, like, gruff dudes who always talk about hot girls and penises. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like I feel like she's playing on this, like, men are, like, obnoxious kind of joke.
I feel like it would make it, like, the joke would have hit home more if, like, if we're making a joke about toxic masculinity specifically.
That's what I'm trying to say. Thank you.
Yeah. It would hit home better if it wasn't attached to some sort of an anatomical feature. Instead, yeah, it was sure. Some other ridiculously toxic masculine thing. You know, mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm almost ready for my, like, white tank top now. Or, like, I don't know. You know, like, or, like, my... I don't know, insert, like, gym-going,
yeah.
bro-y thing here. You know, like,
right, yeah.
I don't know, like, anything along those lines.
I think I'm ready for my bicep tattoo now.
Yeah. You know, you know, like, something like that.
Totally.
It would totally hit home better.
Yeah, 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 for sure. This is, like... It's like, it just, I feel like we're, like, really talking about one single joke, but, like, it's just so funny how sometimes, like, I can watch Friends and be like, this show is so funny, but, like, here's how I would change the jokes 25 years later. Like, you know what I mean? And, like,
yeah.
And it's like, the essence of the jokes are just classic, and, like, the characters are classic, and but, like, there's some specific lines that are, like, you can still make something funny out of this scene. You can still have, like, this story be the story, mm-hmm. but just, like, change it so it's this way. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, and I think that just shows us, like, how the times change. You know what I mean? Like, it's been 25 years. This joke, mm-hmm. these jokes would be written differently now,
yeah.
you know? And I think that that's really cool. We yeah. see the way that, you know, media has changed in a lot of ways. Anyways, I want to talk about
yeah.
Gail.
Yeah. It would be really cool to see it change now. But I also want to point out that, like, at the same time, and just, like, the reason that we're doing this show is that this is a 90s show with 90s jokes that are not acceptable anymore, but is still currently super influential. People still watch yeah. and still think is completely acceptable the way that it is. Mm-hmm. And so...
For sure.
Hence this podcast.
So I just wanted to first mention Gail, who is the woman in the velvet shirt. Chandler goes to talk to her and he's like, I know what you're thinking. Founder of Wendy's, which, like, is this a joke? I don't understand. But apparently Gail thinks it's so funny that she is holding onto her knees with her hands. And then she laughs backwards and she loses her balance and catches herself to fall back. Did you notice this?
No.
She fully, like, loses her balance. The actress, you could tell, loses her balance. And then, like, has to pull herself forward again. You have to rewatch it. It's like she was holding onto her knee for balance. She falls backwards. And then, like, her hands slip from her knee and she has to catch herself from falling. It's really funny. So Gail thinks Chandler is so funny that she's literally falling off her seat laughing. So I think that's great.
Okay, question, Emily. Chandler's bracelet comes out.
Would you do this? Would
yeah.
you
give it away? That was my question to you.
Sorry.
Like... Do you take off, or do you, like, again, in the first season, we've had lengthy conversations about how we don't understand 90s dating etiquette.
Yeah.
Like, let alone, I don't understand current dating etiquette. So maybe it's like, I just don't understand dating etiquette / meeting new humans in real life. But, like, yes, it's super rude to just cut off the conversation and leave immediately. I probably wouldn't have the guts to do that. Mm. But... I guess, like, do I blame her?
I don't know.
Like, do I criticize? Like, part of me is like, I don't know. That bracelet is pretty specific.
But I don't know. Like, I think, like, I feel like she's running away because it's, like, feminine.
Oh, right. And,
like, I don't know, like, if it's, like, he looks gay with that bracelet. Like, that's what I kind of wanted to talk about. Like, is this, like, a joke of, like, he looks like a rich Italian mafia dude? Or is the joke, like, oh, he's wearing a bracelet. He's wearing, like, a feminine item. Do you know what I mean?
See, okay. I don't understand all of the references that are about to be made when Chandler vents about it.
Yeah,
I
looked
but
up a lot.
But also, like, considering that no one made those, like, gendered jokes in the scene before with, like, Ross and Monica, I don't think that that's where it's coming from.
So there actually is a joke that's cut out for the Crave version of this episode. And in, like, the extended version, Phoebe makes a joke about him looking like one of the, like, Go-Go sisters or one of the something sisters. I forget what it is. And then there's also like, so he in this rant makes a joke about like it looking like the Mr. T collection, which Mr. T is.
Yes, please explain this to me. I've wanted to know my whole life.
Okay, so Mr. T is a dude. He is like a professional wrestler who wears a lot of like jewelry that's very eccentric and very like out there.
Oh, cool.
And so he's like, and when he goes like, I pity the fool who puts on this jewelry, like I pity the fool is a Mr. T catchphrase. Like,
oh,
if you look up Mr. T, you'll literally just like see him wearing a bunch of like gold chains and like,
hey, Mr. T.
Yeah. So like,
okay, sweet.
It's very, but like he is a man's man, you know what I mean? But he's just wearing jewelry. So I don't know if this is like,
I feel like there isn't any gender jewelry jokes in this.
It's more just like a terrible bracelet.
I think it's more okay. They're making fun of the bracelet because okay. It's really gaudy. Like it's okay. So bad that they won't even make a gendered
right
connection.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I wasn't sure, but yeah, there's just like so many pop culture references in this episode in general. Like mm-hmm. I feel like you have to look up so many jokes watching this episode if you're not familiar with this time, you know? Yeah, and so he goes on a rant about it, and then Joey is sad, which like is pretty valid.
Yeah, he like walks into like a pretty horrible, like not only is he ranting with a bracelet, but he's like full on like ranting about Joey in that moment, right?
Yeah. Well, oops. He's like, is he ranting about Joey? Like, I don't know. I feel like he's just like, he just thinks it's ridiculous that Joey would get him this bracelet. And like, I think that like, it's one thing to have like a conversation with your friend about like this, but it's like another thing to just like rant in a public space about Joey when like people in that cafe know Joey, you know what I mean? And like,
right.
Just like being really rude and like loud and obnoxious, I think is like, yeah, it wasn't okay. Chandler was not valid in this moment.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it was like an overreaction for sure. And he's ranting. I think that what I have the biggest issue is how he deals with the situation from this point on.
Mm.
So like Joey comes in, he's upset, obviously. And leaves. And obviously there's some pretty good jokes made in the process. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good impression.
Do you know who Marcel Marceau is?
No.
He's a French actor who's a mime.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. Okay. And so wait.
Also, I thought it was Marceau, but it's Marcel Marceau.
Mm.
Marcel. Not to be confused with Ross's monkey.
We
could just follow this
storyline.
Story, if you want, yeah.
So, okay, I guess, so the next scene in this storyline is that, like, Chandler is following Joey into the apartment, Joey's upset, and Chandler's like, I'll never take it off my wrist. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, that's his, like, his apology, like, his, how he's trying to reconcile the situation. And what I find really frustrating with that is it's like, I'm not like that clearly was not the issue.
Yeah.
And it's not an actual genuine offer of reconciliation. It's a, trying to do something to make it so that, oh, well, now you can't be angry at me anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's less of like a actually trying to resolve the issue and make up for how shitty he was and like, and, you know, comfort Joey in a real way, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. But, and I do think that like, there's a lot of clear communication in this scene. Like, I think that Joey's like, you know, if you didn't like the bracelet, Chandler, you could have just told me mm-hmm. and like not worn it. And like, that's a valid point, Joey. And then Chandler goes like, yeah, but does what, do, like, you know, what does it say about like how much this friendship means to me that like, I didn't like it, but I still wore it for you. And like, so that's Chandler's like kind of side of the argument. Mm. And then Joey goes like, well, then you like, how about the part where you like made fun of me and like insulted the bracelet? Like, that's mm-hmm. not okay. And like, then Chandler's like, yeah, well, that's the part where I'm a wank, you know, like, and I actually just feel like that's a very clear,
they pretty much, you know, sketched out this, like the situation pretty well.
Yeah. And like, I think that like, that's actually like a really realistic kind of conversation of two people, like showing their sides of the argument about something where they both feel like they're kind of valid on, but Chandler doesn't actually isn't convinced that he's valid. Like, and then there's just like this kind of exchange where like it's heated. And then Chandler's like, yeah, I'm definitely wrong here. And then he's like, I gotta find this bracelet. You know, like, I just think that like,
I'm here on my knees.
Though you may have it in anger now. I also don't understand how we lost it in like, the 30 seconds from going up from the...
But Monica's apartment, it falling off was like a preface to the fact that it falls off.
Foreshadowing. Yeah.
Okay, and also my theory about how it never shows up again, like these bracelets never show up on them again, is that it probably fell off of both of them and they mm-hmm. both lost it.
That sounds... Yeah, right.
But then following the storyline on...
Yeah.
So then what happens is that like Chandler has to go look for the bracelet. He can't find the bracelet. He buys a new bracelet. We find out the bracelet was $400.
That's insane. If anyone is going to buy me a $400, I'm telling everyone right here, right now, if you're ever going to buy me a $400 piece of jewelry, please just give me the cash instead. That's I 100% will never wear a $400 piece of jewelry. I barely wear $12 pieces of jewelry. I do not wear jewelry at all. So if ever you're going to give me something that's jewelry, give me cash instead.
It's why, yeah, and $400 in the 90s, like we're talking like
yeah,
$600, $700.
We're going to look it up.
$600.
$400 in 1996 is the equivalent of $700 today.
Boom.
So when he paid Joey $812, how much is that? $1,431. So he owed him a shit ton.
But that's
money.
Not even as much. Like, that's not even everything he owes him.
I know. It's not.
Anyway. So.
Yeah. That's great. That's almost double. Wow. And our... Quinn, do you think our minimum wage has doubled in that amount of time?
Definitely not in New York.
No. Actually, I don't know for sure. But yeah, continue.
And not to mention that, like, cost of housing has gone up so much faster than general inflation as well. So
yeah. Anyway. So minimum wage doesn't even cover housing anymore.
Yeah. So he buys his bracelet, $400. And then he can't return it when he realizes that Gunther found the other bracelet because it's engraved with best buds.
No, but what do you mean he can't replace it?
Well, he can't return it.
Oh, he can't return it. Right. Because yeah.
Okay. Now he has two.
Yeah.
But he can't return.
No, I have two. Why do you have two?
And okay.
Well, this one's for you.
And so this is the thing is that like Chandler's kind of a like. An ass in the whole situation. He's not actually offering any real reconciliation.
Yeah.
This gesture, or what it turns out to be by accident, is actually like a true like reconciling type version where it's like, you know, maybe recognizing that like that bracelet was really important to you. Maybe like you need to have one.
Right. But that's absurd amount of money to spend.
It's so ridiculous. Again, it was like a purchase where it's like, I really want this, but I can't really justify it for myself, so I'll give it to Chandler.
It's terrible. Yeah. No, I think Joey, like, genuinely wanted Chandler to have that. Like,
Yeah, but I think that, yes, but I think that he also...
He wouldn't have gotten it engraved.
Yeah, no, no, I know, but like...
He wanted Chandler to do this like, act
he
for him.
Loved it for himself right. more, like, a lot. And so, like, the love of it and the concept, he was like, then, was like, well, then I'll give this love to Chandler.
It's not so much that he loves it, he would love if someone did this for him.
Is yeah, what I also mean. Think okay. that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I see it. I see.
Anyway, and so it bothers me that, like, by accident, Chandler ends up reconciling the situation, even though, like, he has clearly, like, the maturity of a 2-year-old and, like, you know, like, I'll just keep wearing, I'll never take the bracelet off. That's how we're going to solve this problem. And instead ends up, like, accidentally resolving it properly.
Yeah.
Anyway, it just bothers me that, like, Chandler is an ass and he gets away with so much and it just bothers me.
Yeah. But I do want to say that Matthew Perry's acting in this scene is fucking hilarious.
Matthew Perry's acting is always hilarious.
He's just, his whole body language, his whole, like, the way he moves.
Well, this is for you.
Yeah, this one's for you. And then he's like, get out. No, I can't. So good. Every line that he says is just excellent. We're bracelet buddies. That's what they'll call us. So good. And it's a terrible bracelet.
Oh,
okay. So I want to move back a little bit just because yeah. we followed the storyline. So let's go back to Central Perk, in which now we're seeing Rachel flirting with cute coffee house guy who is a doctor and talking about skiing. Is he a doctor? Probably. I just assumed he was a doctor.
He's probably a doctor.
And save me from the nice man. Oh, no. He's not a doctor. Okay.
Right.
And then, yeah. So, tell me about how you're feeling in this scene.
Okay. This is... Well, okay. I feel like I just ranted a whole bunch about Chandler.
Sure, I'll talk about this
one. Yeah. you take this one.
Okay. This is some... bullshit.
So much bullshit.
This is, like, not okay. Like, I try to watch this and I try to justify it. I'm like, is Ross doing something that's even remotely okay in this moment? And it is, like, there's no way on this earth that this is okay. So for context, if you haven't seen this episode in a while, Rachel is flirting with this dude.
Like, Ross, clearly flirting.
Clearly flirting.
Enjoying her conversation.
Some friendly touch is happening. They're giggling. They're laughing. It's like a nice exchange between two people. Clearly wonderful. Ross has seen the scene and has, like, either convinced himself because he's... I don't want to say delusional because I don't know if that's kind of ableist. But because he's weird into believing that, like, she's not enjoying herself, or is he convincing himself, or is he not at all convincing himself, and he's just trying to convince Phoebe because he knows that he's incorrect. But he's like, I'm gonna go, quote-unquote, save Rachel. Which, like, come on. Come on, Ross. And then he goes, and of course we get an excellent, hilarious moment where he's, like, pretending he's in an ad and, like, excuse me, are you Rachel? Like, at least we'll have something to tell the grandchildren. Yeah.
And, like, it's so the way that he saves Rachel, like, quote-unquote saves Rachel, mm-hmm. is, like, literally the worst thing. It's like, I am going to try to get you out of this by humiliating you, mm-hmm. like, intensely.
But it's also, like, is this humiliating? Like, I'm not trying to justify Ross, but I'm saying, like, that I think that there's, like, some layers to this joke because, like, they're saying, like, that people who, like, do online dating is, like,
well, I
hilarious.
Think it's an ad in the paper. And, like, back then, like, it was something that was fairly, like, faux pas.
Right.
Or, like, very specific.
Totally. But, like, I just think, like, nowadays, like, online dating, blind dating, all that is, like, so normal that,
so many,
like,
people met on Tinder and got married.
Like, yeah, like, this is, like, to me, this isn't, like, it's insulting contextually, but, like, this is not an insult 25 years later if someone was like, I saw
but
you're like,
I think the way he,
oh, for sure.
he approaches it
yeah,
is
yeah.
like super weird. And then also the way he talks, like, I'm surprised the guy who Rachel was flirting with wasn't like, I need to save you, yeah, from this guy.
Like, are you, which, okay?
Can I just do a segue here to talk about, like, saving a woman?
Yeah.
Like, the quote-unquote... Okay, I want to talk about how, like, in some ways, it's a valid concept. But because men are creepy and weird, and it wouldn't have to be a valid concept if we lived in a world where a woman herself could tell a man to back off without putting herself in danger.
Yeah.
And because very often, a woman asking someone to back off is usually met with hate and anger, and women can get hurt from it. And so yeah, there's like a risk involved. And so I just want to like point that out, mm-hmm, you know, in passing.
Yeah. Anyways, so this is just a terrible scene overall. Rachel is just like really annoyed and sad. And she just like explains like, first I was like, you know, I was into you and then I got clobbered, which like she uses, I've never heard this term used so many times. And like this, I think I never hear the term clobbered. And then Rachel says it like four times in the sentence. And I'm just like, I've never heard this word used this often. I've used it, heard it like two times in my life. Anyways.
No, you're right. And now we're getting to the conversation. Okay. Yeah. I'm great. Okay. Good. Good. Good.
Yeah. Tired of being clobbered. Like we're never going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And yes.
So, okay, this is a scene where Ross is saying, like, she's like, I'm not yours to save. And then he goes, but you are.
Yeah.
And he goes, and then he tries to explain, but I feel like the sentiment there, he's like, you're my lobster, or you're mine to save. And it really just, like, is kind of revealing to his actual sentiment of kind of like, I own you or you're mine. Mm-hmm. That's where all my possessive behavior has been coming from. And I, in my notes I have here, we see it with Paolo and now again, and then in caps lock, I have, this is a pattern now. And that's true. It's like before it was an issue, but now it's like, this is a very clear red flag pattern, mm-hmm, that is starting to develop. And like,
it's a very common, like, 90s, early 2000 expression of men's love. It's like, this isn't a new form of seeing how men have crushes on women. Like, nerdy, quote unquote, nice guy is like in love with the beautiful woman who like only ever sees him as a friend and doesn't actually want to be with him in that way. And like, finally she sees his good, cute side.
Enter 15 years later, incels.
Yeah, like it's a lot of this, like, he has a lot of like decent human being qualities. That doesn't make him extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I just think that, it's just like, it's not a new trope. It's like, it's a very, we've seen this many, many times in many movies and TV shows, like the trope of like this kid who is like the nerd or like rejected and pines over a woman and like is obsessive about her is like actually not okay and does like not okay behavior. Mm-hmm. And then like somehow gets her in the end. And I do think that there's been a pushback against this in movies. And now we're starting to see like a different version of the nice guy in movies. We still have the classic one, but like more and more, we're now starting to see these like actually like, I love her and like, I just want her to be happy so she could be with whoever she wants to be, you know? And that's more, mm-hmm, of the trope that we're seeing, mm-hmm, now, which like is great, but we need more of it and we, mm-hmm, need to be seeing this more often. All right. So then we're back in Monica and Rachel's apartment. Jack Geller is still being kind of gross. He's just being kind of weird in general.
That's literally what I was like, Jack being gross again. I don't even remember what he was saying.
This is the Steffi Graf scene. Steffi Graf is quite a tush. But then, and then like, he's also just like weird. Like he's just like, his character is just odd. Cause then like Ross walks in and, you know, Judy Geller is like, oh, like, I'm not going to see my grandson. And then she, like, he goes, no, like, he's with Carol. And then Jack
explanation
was like,
why they didn't want to pay to have kids on set.
Yeah. And then he goes, like, then Jack just goes, a woman in my office is a lesbian. It's like, okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's not even, he didn't even say a bad thing. Like, he's just, like, stating a very random fact. And it's just like, you're just like, oh, okay. And then he literally goes like, I'm just saying. Yeah. Like, it's just like the most ridiculous thing. Like, anyways, and then his favorite commercial comes on and Ross just like backs away slowly. He's like, what the fuck is happening here? Like, it's just, yeah, anyways, but
Monica asks, where have you been? It is like super creepy the way they're like, oh, it's that commercial that you like. And they both like turn away and slowly sit down on the couch like TV zombies. And you're like, that was a weird interaction.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Monica asks, where have you been? And he goes, emotional hell. And it's like, been there, Ross, been there. But
anyways. And then so Monica has not yet asked for money from her parents. And so Ross encourages her to tell them. And she is met by her parents being like, Monica doesn't have a job. It's fine. Emily, where does 10% of your check go?
In the bank.
See, technically, all of the money is in the bank. Anyway, but yes, I think it's like in savings is what you're supposed to. Yeah. Whatever. Did people back then not put all their money in the bank?
No, I think they did. I think it's just like it's not being taken out and spent. It's like still in the bank is the idea.
Right.
Yeah. 10% of your paycheck going to savings is really nice and not doable for most people.
Yeah. Seriously. And also I like at this point how like Monica has definitely put off telling them for so long that it's like, I run that money dry.
Yeah, like I have like no more
whether
savings.
Or not I was saving, it's like even if I was, it's all gone now.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
For sure.
And like Monica has been without a job for a while now at this point.
Yeah, that's true. But then she gets a check from Ross, which is really cute.
A dinosaur check.
Yeah. And
did you know that my first thing of checks was WWF checks?
Oh, wow.
That's World Wildlife Foundation. Just
nice. They have pandas.
It has pandas and koalas. And like, each check is like a different animal. And it like rotates through like 3 or 5 animals.
Does it give you a fact about the animals?
I don't think so.
I think it's cute that he is.
Dinosaur check. I think it's so adorable. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't he have like a dinosaur watch later too? Like he's just got like.
I love that nerdy part of.
I know.
Ross.
I love it. You're a cheaposaurus, which like doesn't make any sense to me because like I feel like Ross would have been like, how much do you need to borrow? Not just like written her a random check.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean?
Like, so, but anyways. All right. Jack and Judy Geller are turning Monica's apartment into, or Monica's room in their house into a gym. And so they brought a bunch of Monica's stuff in boxes. And one of the things they pull out of the box is Monica's bathing suit from when she was in high school and when she was in a bigger body. And so the fat jokes begin.
The fat jokes begin.
And it's rough.
It's rough. Especially because, like,
she's, like, an average-size North American.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
She's, like, she's in an average-size body. As opposed to, like, the tiny, thin Courtney Cox body that she's normally in. You know what I mean? Like, and, like this, it's, either way, it's not okay. But, like, the fact that, like, they're, like, you're so fat. And she's, like, maybe a size 12. You know what I mean? Like,
I know. It's wild.
It's absurd. It's, and it just, like, to me, I was sitting next to Quinn while we were watching this episode. And, like, for this entire prom video, like, Quinn and I just, like, did not laugh. Like, we just, like, it's just not even funny. And it's, like, anyways. Yeah. I want to, like, go ahead and right away suggest that if you haven't already listened to the episode of the bonus episode of the show Maintenance Phase, it's all about, they have a bonus episode that's all about fat suits. And the way.
Also, here's a good time to be like, if you don't listen to Maintenance Phase.
Oh, yeah.
And perhaps maybe you're having some like questions. You don't quite understand like what we mean by fat phobia. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll definitely do a little excerpt here. We've talked a little bit on the show about it on the show, but I definitely think that you should turn over to your podcast directory, look up Maintenance Phase, mm-hmm. and Start,
yes. Watch all of them.
Start anywhere.
listen
to anything. And yeah. You'll start getting a sense of what we're talking about. Essentially, society's ideas around fat and the acceptability of fat shaming and marginalizing people based on their body size is a very large issue. It's as opposed to what everyone will want you to believe to justify the situation. It is actually not based on science or the benefit of people's health. It's pretty fucking detrimental to like understatement to a lot of people's lives. And it's just, I think that also, you know, seeing it in the 90s, especially when there was even less criticism on representation of body sizes in the media, especially like women. You know, you have Courtney Cox. We have, you know, the women on the show are like itty bitty. Itty bitty. and so when we're talking about like someone who's like quote unquote fat, like it's doubly ridiculous and harmful because the size that they're actually making these like fat jokes about and fat shaming about is actually a very average size.
Which, like, it wouldn't be okay either way.
Yeah.
but it's, like, it's just, like, it's...
They're literally turning to the majority, like, the vast majority of women and being...
And saying you're too fat.
Yeah.
Like, it's... Yeah. It's just fucked up. Like, fat phobia for someone, whether they're 400 pounds or 150 pounds, is not okay. But, like, it's just, like, it's even... It's just like harmful on a totally different level. Yeah. So if you have a chance, you should listen to the show, the podcast Maintenance Phase. It's a great, great show. They debunk a lot of like health fads, wellness fads, et cetera, et cetera. And they have a Patreon-only bonus episode that is all about fat suits. Which is really great. And I will be referencing a lot over the next little bit because I've done quite, like, I listened to the episode, Quinn listened to the episode, and we've both done, like,
we're also big fans of Maintenance Phase.
Yeah.
It's, love. They're, like,
it's, like, hilarious. Our dream to have, like, Michael Hobbs and Aubrey Gordon
who are the hosts
on our podcast, but, like, it's never going to happen. But
okay, let's not, like, go there. I just want to email them and be, like, how much would it cost? Like, just give me a ballpark number and we'll see if we can do it.
We'll see if we can, like, give you our deficit profits from this.
But they have a very well-researched podcast. Yeah, they are journalists primarily.
It's always important to like hear from people who are marginalized about
their experiences of being marginalized. And one of the biggest issues with marginalization is that we talk about, like in this case, fatness, and we never actually include fat people in those conversations.
Yeah.
And so instead, turning around and listening to people who are fat, talking about fat shaming, fat phobia in society, and experiences of being fat is the most important thing to do within this process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so let's still actually talk about the episode, though.
Yes.
So we get this moment where, you know, we see this bathing suit that Monica used to wear, and then they make a bunch of fat jokes about how she's so big, they can't believe that that was her bathing suit, which is ridiculous. And then they find this prom video, and they this video, they don't know what it is, and they decide to, you know, throw it into the VCR, for those who are not familiar. That is a thing that plays tapes.
It came before DVDs. Okay, now we're being assholes.
And then we get, like, a whole other slew of jokes. So, first of all, they start making fun of Rachel's nose, and then they talk about how, like, she got a nose job. And so, like...
Which has some questionable aspects to it.
Yeah, it's like, okay, sure, you're making fun of Rachel's face, which is, like, a perfectly lovely face. and then we get into Monica, and right away the camera zoomed in on her fat stomach. She's wearing this terrible, ugly dress. Like, just terribly ugly.
I also want to point out that they, like, change her character when she's fat.
That's, yeah. Like, I have so much to say about this. Yeah.
Like, the way she goes up to Rachel and hugs her and then, like, she, like, spills food onto Rachel. Yeah, like, she's, like,
sloppy. When Monica's not sloppy.
Like, she is the opposite of that.
Yeah. But, like, fat people are sloppy, quote unquote, you know? And, like, they do this with a whole bunch of things. So, like, I took so many notes. Okay, so first of all, right away, we see her and she's eating. Okay? Because that's all fat people ever do is eat. Please note the sarcastic tone to my voice here. Okay? Then we find out she's eating a sandwich with mayo. Because mayonnaise is a quote-unquote fat person food.
And there's so much mayo that it's oozing out.
Yeah. And then she's sloppy. She gets this, like, mayo on Rachel. And then, like, later on, she's, like, kind of crass as she, like, whispers to Rachel about, like, how Roy touched her boob. And she's like,
does that have to do with her being fat, or is that just, like,
teenagers being teenagers? Because,
like, there's a lot of things in this that it's just, like, teenagers being teenagers.
I think so, but I think, like, it's even more funny because, like, and her date is also fat, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, like, this big thing of, like, every single stereotype that you could fit in about a fat person is being portrayed in this, like, 4-minute scene. It's really not that long of a scene. Mm-hmm. Like, she's, like, a fat person now, and she has a fat, like,
her character a fat is personality. Now a, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is the most ridiculous thing. And it's like, I think that we are so, it's so normalized that I think it would be very, like, it's not until in the past few years of learning about all of this sort of media representation that it's like, oh my God, look at what they did. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that's so normalized that we would never really notice that, like, oh, Monica's character is entirely different. Like, like, as we've talked about in this show, it's very clear that Monica's, like, cleanliness, intensity, all of these things are really, like, born out of, like, the trauma of how she was raised. And that would be, like, deeply embedded into her character, even as a teenager. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And even yeah. when she was fat, you yeah. know? It's,
yeah, they completely change her into a whole different person. And it's like, yeah. So we get the first joke from Chandler. I mean, from Joey, he goes, some girl ate Monica. And then, you know, like, oh, shut up. Like, the camera adds 10 pounds. So how many cameras are actually on you?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, and the worst part is that these fat suits aren't even nice. Like, and they always make fat people in fat suits look terrible.
Like, yeah, and then also, like, was brought up in the Maintenance Phase podcast is that they don't look real, you know, like, they're not actually representative. I also want to bring up the what they said about how, like, throwing on a fat suit is not just, like, a thing that you do mm-hmm. randomly and easily. Like, there was, like, a very large process in, like, designing a fat suit that fits an actor mm-hmm. and, like, designing the clothes that go on it, choosing the clothes that go on it. Like, there's a lot of really active and involved steps. And so it's not like, oh, we'll just do this and it just is, like, this easy random thing that people do flippantly, and then they did it once and therefore it sticks. Yeah. It's like, this is, like, a thing, and they're also, like, very popular mm-hmm. in 90s pop culture. Like, there's been, and again, Maintenance Phase is a whole thing on Shallow Hal, which is in the 90s as well, mm-hmm. or maybe early 2000s, I forget.
It's terrible.
So just keeping in mind that, like, a fat suit is a very intentional costly task to take on and to choose and to execute in mm-hmm. a show. So it's not like we just did it because, you know?
Yeah, totally. And, like, on the flip side, they are just, like, making fun of them and the way they look in the prom video. You know what I mean? Like, they make fun of Ross's, like, very intense afro and mustache, you know? And then, like,
all of their hair is ridiculous.
Yeah, and, like, it's just, like, they're making fun of, like, they're basically just, like, making fun of 80s style, right? In a mm-hmm. lot of ways. But the thing is that, like, yes, they're making fun of the others for their style, but, like, it's very different when, like fat people get made fun of on a regular basis. And, like, not just get made fun of. It's not like, oh, sticks and stones will break my bones, like, but words will never harm me. Like, it's not like, oh, it's just words. Like, it's like there's actual, like, systemic structures that prevent fat people from existing safely in the world. You know, like, it's just there's, like, so many barriers for fat people. It's not just, like, a matter of, like, you shouldn't make fun of someone because it's going to hurt their feelings, which, like, is not okay. But, like, it's beyond that. It's not, like, oh, well, like, you experience every, like, everyone, regardless of body size, experiences, like, you know, being made fun of for their body. Like, all women have, you know, insecurities about their body. It's like, no. There's, like, insecurities. There's bullying for people. Like, there's bullying, but, like, it's totally different when there's actual systemic structures that exist that prevent fat people from existing safely in the world. Like, just takes it to a whole different level.
And we'll get into those at a later date.
Yes.
Because we are tangenting as we normally do. And there's a lot to talk about it. And we do have plans. Like, this is a very interwoven topic throughout all of Friends, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So we'll be, like, delving into this again and again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So then, obviously, Ross. I was trying to say Ross has a crush on Rachel, and said Rosh. So he is sitting with Rachel. Rachel asks him what he's doing this summer, and he says he's working on his music. And he's kind of, like, weird and creepy in this scene. I don't know about you. Oh, my God.
So weird and creepy. I literally wrote down Ross being creepy and weird with Rachel.
I wrote, he's so weird and kind of creepy. So, legit. Yeah, and so then the boys show up, or it's supposed to be the boys, but it's just Roy who shows up. And again, another stereotype, like, Roy is fat himself, and, like, because he's fat, obviously he's a big Star Wars nerd. You know, it's like he's seen Star Wars 317 times because, like, all nerds are, like, have this specific body type. And of course, Monica, being fat, would only date another fat person. And then, like, Roy leans forward and attaches the corsage. And then we get this hilarious moment of, I just told Rachel that Roy touched my boob. And Monica's, like, so cute. She's like, hee hee hee. Like,
So now we're actually going to get to the conversation of what we said at the beginning of today's episode. Essentially, like, did Ross do something? Did he do anything, really?
Did he do anything, yeah.
is the question.
Okay, so we get, yeah.
So we have, essentially, Chip hasn't shown up. He's probably not going to come. Rachel is in tears, and Monica's like, well, if you're not going to go to prom, I'm not going to go to prom. And then
Roy's pissed.
And then basically the Geller parents are like, Ross, you should go to prom with Rachel, you know, wear your dad's tux. And he is kind of like, no, she wouldn't want to go to prom with me. And he's kind of, like, egged on, being like, but you're a college guy now, which automatically makes you cooler. She might actually go with you. Insinuating that, like, everyone knows that Ross has a huge crush on Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally, he decides to do it.
Yeah.
He's in the tux that magically fits him perfectly. And it's very cute. He, like, he's such a weirdo and very cute.
Be cool.
Yeah. He's like, okay, let's go. He's like, okay, one second, Dad. Be cool. Just, like, getting to the right mind frame. Yeah, Ross never changes. And then grabs, like, the random flowers in the vase.
It's cute. Like, it's definitely very cute. Yeah.
And then goes downstairs just in time for the other four kids to be running out the door.
Yeah, because Chip showed up.
Mm-hmm. And then prom video turns off. Everyone's so amazed.
Because Ross apparently did something amazing.
I can't believe you did that. And then Rachel goes and epic kiss. Okay, so you say Ross didn't do anything. Go.
I don't say that he didn't do anything, okay? I think that, like, I don't know if it was something heroic.
Yeah, it's like low-key generous that is made out to be epically heroic.
But is it generous? Like, he wants to go out with her. How is he sacrificing anything, or how is he doing anything that's so kind by asking her to go to the prom? First of all, who the fuck knows if she'd even want to go with him? And I get that it's like, well, like, he had a crush on her and, like, he decided to, like, be vulnerable and, like, show her this vulnerable side of him and actually ask her out finally after all this time of having a crush on her. And, like, maybe we wouldn't be where we are in the show unless he, like, you know, actually got to go out with her that night on prom night. Who knows, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, I just think that there's this weird, like, oh, look how much he likes her. Like, obviously he's absolved of doing all the terrible thing that he's done so far.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. So, these are my exact sentiments. Except when I watched the show last night. When something, because I was actually watching, like, I watch a lot of Friends. And most of the time it's actually, like, in the last few years, it's mostly just been on repeat in the background. Which actually has changed in the last few months because my anxiety has subsided. So I'm allowed to, like, not have TV continuously going in the background of my life. So congratulations, Quinn.
And tell me how.
And anyway, and then I was watching it last night and I realized something. Like, yes, what Monica says, like, oh, I can't believe you actually did that. I think it's, like, I feel like it could have come more from a perspective of, like, I never knew that you did that. Like, I've gone all these years and we never knew. But I think on Rachel's side, what happened there is that, swing back to the beginning of the episode, where she's like, I tell you that I, you know, I fall for you, I get clobbered. And then you fall for me and I get clobbered. And then she watches this and she realizes that, like,
he's actually been clobbered multiple times.
He also has gotten clobbered in this process of them having, like,
this back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, and she could empathize with him because she recently, like, fell for him and got clobbered. And so she, like, sees how, like, that happened to him. And I think that for her, she was like, oh.
I also wrote that in my notes. I feel like it's like, was this a moment where Rachel, like, because Rachel has only had him, like, tell her that he likes her. And, like, while he was already dating someone, while he was in the middle of dating someone else. And then, like, from her perspective, she doesn't actually know the extent to how much he loves her. Yeah. Like, and getting this kind of, like, behind the scenes proof of how much he loves her and for how long he's loved her. Like, I think that that's, like, a moment where it clicks for Rachel. It's like, oh, it's not just like he's been doing this to be kind of like possessive of me, which he has been. Like, it's from this, like, deep place of love. Doesn't validate it, in my opinion. But, like, she's seen this, like, love that he has for her, and therefore it clicks to her. And so, yes, that I get, but I don't necessarily think that, like, I think the way the show portrays it is that he's done something so heroic, whereas I think what he's done is just, like, be vulnerable, and Rachel got a chance to
the mark,
see,
but, like,
yeah.
And, like, it's a little heartbreaking because he got his hopes up for, like, a matter of, like, maybe 15 minutes, but was not humiliated at all. Because it would be so much worse if, like,
He had gone down
and, like...
Yeah.
But there is something, like, strange about, like, there is, like, these, like, weird heroic vibes that kind of come off of it.
And I think, like, I to me, heroism is when there's, like, a selfless act. I don't feel like this was a selfless act at all. I feel like it was, like, he was doing something that would, in the end, benefit him.
He was, like, taking a shot.
Yeah.
And missed. And, like, but missed in a really, like, fairly safe way in that, like, no one saw the shot. I don't know. It's a weird analogy. But...
And, like, I understand why Ross was, like, uncomfortable having everyone watch this, because it was a vulnerable moment for him. And, like...
Especially within the context of, like... what just happened earlier that day.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I do understand. I understand everything, but I think, like, the story they're trying to tell doesn't quite come off as in the way that they want it to come off. Like, that he's done something so amazing. When
I'm super curious what other people think.
Yeah. But if the writers were just trying to be like, he's vulnerable in how much he loves Rachel and Rachel finally sees this vulnerability, then sure, goal achieved.
We're at that closing scene.
Yeah, closing scene.
Which is
Monica sitting on the couch.
Poor thing.
Eating ice cream. Continuing to watch this prom video in which Monica, who's in the fat suit, says, Mom, I'm hungry. Yeah, she says that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, of course, fat people are always eating and or hungry.
Oh, my God.
And, like, oh, my God. It's just, yeah. Anyways, and then, obviously, the video turns into a sex tape of Jack and Judy. And I think accidentally seeing your parents' sex tape would be the worst thing. But I do think it's hilarious how she, like, it happens. She puts her ice cream down. She, like, glances at the door for a brief moment. And then, like, is just like, oh, my God, what's happening? Like, she's like, is anyone seeing me watch this? Like, what is happening in this moment?
Do I have to carry this burden alone?
She puts her ice cream down. Like, she's, like, feeling nauseous. Like, so I think that's it. We'll call it.
So thanks for listening, folks. Don't forget to keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.
Woo-woo!
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the Phalange. If you're picking up what we're putting down, please consider supporting us on Patreon, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and or sharing us with all of your friends on social media.
You can find us at whatthephalangepodcast.com, email us at wtphalange@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at WTPhalangePod or follow us on Instagram at WTPhalangePodcast. All links will be included in the show notes below.
Want to get in touch with us each individually? You can find Emily on Twitter as EmilyB__, and that's Emily with an IE.
And you can find Quinn at TheBasicNB on Instagram. Keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.